This podcast episode has been brought to you by our good and dear friends from Resilient Fightwear. Resilient Fightwear is a brand located on New York City, New York, obviously, which designs some of the best Muay Thai shorts I ever had the opportunity to wear. Well, not some of the best Muay Thai shorts I've had the opportunity to wear. They have some very awesome designs. They have some immaculate, very soft t-shirts that are super comfortable wearing. They just released their glove line. They make now MMA and boxing / Muay Thai gloves. They're amazing, whatever they do. They're geniuses on their designs. They have awesome designs. They have some of the best hoodies, and it's cold outside. You need a good hoodie. Why not getting it from Resilient Fightwear? They're amazing. And it's a small business, and you know that you have to help them small businesses. Also, this podcast is brought to you by our dear and good friends from Sponsored Fighters. Sponsored Fighters is an online community dedicated to help brands and fighters alike get the growth they need and the representation they need. If you're a brand, just go there and fill the formularies you need, and you're part of the branding listing. If you're a fighter, just fill the forms up and you will be part of the fighter listing. It's an amazing community. It will help your brand or as a literal brand or your brand as a fighter grow. It doesn't matter if you're a boxer, a Muay Thai fighter, a jiu-jitsu grappler, they will help you. It's an amazing project you need to get in. Let's make fighting great. It's the best sport there is. Why not make it grow with the help of Sponsored Fighters? Go there. You can find all the info on my link tree.
Damas y caballeros, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Big Mo, and I am pleased to welcome you to your podcast main event. Introducing first, your host, he hails from Mexico City, Mexico, presenting Chair Monster, Jose Manuel. I am ready. Our host is ready. Are the listeners ready? No, I said podcast listeners tuning in across the world, are you ready for Che Monster Talks?
Bro, I appreciate it.
Today's guest is the most depressed fighter I've ever met, I've ever known about. he loves kettlebells also. Jiu-Jitsu black belt, MMA fighter, yeah. Model also, Diego Lopez. Yeah. What's up? How's everything?
It's going very well. Thank you so much for having me. What a fantastic intro. I'm honored to be the saddest fighter, you know. A dream come true, really.
Now, why did you develop your character on TikTok and on social media as a depressed fighter who is just barely scraping through life?
Well, Nylift started a couple years ago because I don't like how fakely positive the fitness industry is, and I feel like it's gross, and it's so obvious to me that you can do it. It almost feels pretentious and kind of pandering. It's a big turnoff for me, and I know it's a big turnoff for a lot of people. So I started doing these instructional fitness videos on my Instagram three or four years ago. Just like a monotone kind of sad voiceover. I thought it was a funny joke. And then little by little, it's just grown and moved in different places. And it's mostly been workout videos. And then it became basically only kettlebells because that's what I'm mostly interested in. And then last month I started a TikTok for only Nylift instead of for me. And it's doing very well. And people seem to be responding to it. Some people don't get that it's a joke. And then they comment, as you should. If you don't understand the joke, you'd be like, this is bad advice. So yeah, that's the point, that it is bad advice. But I do like to sprinkle in good technical advice, but then sometimes just a little bit more blue,
It's really funny. I love it. I don't know if you remember, but yesterday you were doing your live workout and I was asking you something like, how many kettlebell swings do I need to do to get over my ex?
If the second I find out, I'll let you know, because I still haven't figured it out. It's still whatever number I'm at plus some, because it's not easy. But that's kind of that. You get the humor that I'm doing with Nihilift, where it's like working out a lot of times isn't for everyone the same thing, where it's like, I like to feel good. It's like, no, I work out sometimes because I feel bad. And and this is a way for me to deal with those emotions. And it's not always it's reaching goals. It's more just sometimes just dealing with the feelings you have right now.
Yeah, it's a great coping mechanism. Let's face it.
Absolutely.
Now, something I was impressed is the fact that you're a jiu-jitsu black belt. I was imagining you were only a kettlebell instructor when I first found out about you. I'm a white belt, so please don't hate on me that much.
I love white belts.
No one fucking does. We are the scum of the earth. Let's face it.
Everyone's a white belt, though. Who isn't and who is not. So I think a lot of people, because it's funny on TikTok, because I don't even have my name on it, I realize. It's just as fitness but sad. And I've noticed the tone of voice people will use with me on there compared to like Twitter or Instagram, where you see that it's like Diego Lopez, MMA instructor, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. People don't say that many rude things to me there, but in TikTok, because they don't know that I can fight, kind of get a little rude, which whatever, it's the internet, I don't care. I don't take it very personally, but I think it's just funny to be the assumptions that people make, where they assume I'm only a kettlebell instructor, which, you know, I'm working on getting my certification, hopefully this month, with Steve Cotter. But job is MMA. I teach MMA. I fought MMA. I'm a black belt. I work really hard. I'm there, you know, 7 days a week. That's who I am as a person. But I think the fact that I'm a little detached from kettlebelling, where it's not martial arts, where I can make it's easier for me to make jokes in that world for me than it is about jiu-jitsu, because I respect it. Not that I don't respect kettlebells, but it's different. You know, I've been doing jiu-jitsu for 12 years. It's a big part of who I am.
Yeah, it's two different worlds. I first started getting into kettlebells and then I got into jiu-jitsu. So we're both going in the opposite directions.
Oh.
How
I mean, we started at different ends, we're on the same road.
Yeah, exactly. We're just going to end up crashing at the middle. How good do you consider your striking?
Yeah. Very good. My striking is probably better than my jiu-jitsu. I've always done everything. I started with mixed martial arts. I didn't start just doing jiu-jitsu. I started with everything. I've always done, I started with my same coach I have now, Roger Mamadov at Williamsburg MMA. And we've always been a gym about not having weaknesses. So even though I am a black belt in jiu-jitsu and I love jiu-jitsu, and if someone had to ask me what's the one martial art I could do for the rest of my life, it would be jiu-jitsu. But I am a student of the game when it comes to striking. I'm an enormous fan of boxing and Muay Thai, and specifically the golden era of boxing, the Willie Peps and the Nicolini Lochis and you know, the people that kind of laid down the foundation of what boxing was back in the early days. I love that stuff. I find it wildly romantic. And I think people, no one knows me, but the people that do know me and the people that come train with me, I think they have an assumption that I'm just a grappler. But I love to throw. I'm a very good striker.
If you're ever in Mexico City, let me know. We can spar. My grappling is shit.
Oh, man, I love that. Where are you? Where are you in Mexico?
Mexico City. I'm, yeah, Mexican. I'm a white Mexican, just like
you. I see the gloves.
Yeah. Those are my very first gloves I ever had. My grandpa gave it to me when I was 6 years old. Okay. So I've been training.
That's awesome.
Most of my life, yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm even wearing a Julio Cesar Chavez shirt. That's how Mexican I am.
Senior or junior?
Senior. Junior is bullshit. All right. Like, I don't want to throw shade at him, but he doesn't have a heart. But
no, of course. He's a, yeah, it's very, very difficult to be a fighter when you're raised in a mansion. It's a grit that you can only, not only, but mostly develop from a childhood of hardship. And especially Mexican style boxers, like, those are the grittiest fighters in the world. Like, you know, like, you guys are phenomenal at being able to go to war every time. You know, there's never any, not a lot of feeling out rounds with Mexican fighters. And I love that. I respect that quite a bit.
Yeah, it's very entertaining. It's not the smartest move, if I'm being honest.
Sure, sure.
Thanks God I developed more Philly stance kind of movement. Okay. Yeah. I'm 6'6", so I need to try to protect myself as much as I can. Especially being on Mexico, they will always go to the liver, so you need to start. Yeah.
Bringing those elbows down.
Yeah, yeah. I've had, surprisingly, I've only been TKO'd because of a liver shot once, so it has worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, that'll once is enough. When you get that feeling of wanting to shit out your lungs, it's just it stays with you for a long time, man. I remember that my first body shot, where it's just like you're so there that you're kind of like, what? Why am I on my knees? What's happening? I can't. It stays with you. Yeah, it sticks with me for a long time.
Yeah, you can see God right to the eyes, just saying, just looking at you, telling you fucked up.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes it kind of fun. The danger. The I always tell my students, it's kind of like being a good fighter. It's like having someone point a gun at you and you picking their pocket. It's like, that's the, like, you got to be close enough that you can get it, but you could also get got at any second. So it's like, it's an exchange of vulnerability. That's very cool to me about it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Now, what's the biggest misconception you've ever seen with kettlebell training? Because let's face it, most people, they think the only way to get strong is with a barbell.
Yeah. Well, they're kind of right to a degree. It's a different. There's different types of strength. There's maximum, like one rep max lifting numbers, where you can, you know, keep stacking the bar. And then there's workload. And I'm interested in fighting. I'm interested in being able to fight for a long time, like long rounds, a lot of rounds. And there's nothing that's better for that than kettlebelling, because kettlebelling is the marathon of lifting weights. It's continuous. It's cyclical. You just keep working. And if we're talking about kettlebell sport, we're thinking about 10-minute sets, which I don't think to the average person hearing a 10-minute workout sounds that difficult, but they're thinking of it in the Western style of, you do a couple reps, you put the weight down, you drink a little water, you grab the weights. Kettlebell sport, you don't get to rest. You just keep working. It's wildly difficult. I just think people, and for good reason, kettlebells are, to the Western audience, are still pretty new. Most people have no idea why anyone would use that instead of a barbell or a dumbbell. It's going to take more time for the average person to understand what they are. It's gotten a lot better. Even in the 10 years I've been doing kettlebells, even that time has made it. I've seen the change of people understanding it more and more, and just being able to be like, oh, that's kettlebell, or random gyms just having kettlebells. I just think people, the misconception is the way that they think about the number of the weight. What I mean by that is, sometimes people will ask me what weight they should get. And if it's a man, I usually say 35 pounds. If it's a woman, I usually say 26 pounds, just somewhere around there, unless they're very big or little, very small for their size. And their first comment will be like, oh, that's heavier than I would like. It's like, because you're thinking about curling weight. You're thinking about how much weight you can curl. That's not what kettlebells are used for. So it's just understanding that the kettlebell is great to be used with the entire body. Because even on TikTok, people will comment and be like, what does this exercise work? I'm like, it works the body. That's it. It works the body. As a unit of movement, it works the body. But the kettlebell aspect of it is working for long periods of time, because it is so exhausting. And And I notice it right away when I'm sparring and I'm, you know, 8-10 rounds in and I still feel really fresh. I know it's because A, I have good technique and I know how to relax in a fight. But then B, it's I know that the kettlebelling is helping my cardio and my muscles.
Yeah, let's face it. The good part, the best part of kettlebell training is you work every single part of your body. Like, let's face it, it's very hard. You can if you try to, but it's very hard to skip leg day if you're only working with kettlebells.
Yeah, that's the thing. There is really no day. It's just the day. It's kettlebelling. You could specifically work squats one day, but it's like if you're doing swings, if you're doing jerks, if you're doing snatches, that's everything. You're doing all of it.
Exactly. Like most times people, when I'm talking with a friend and I need to accept that I'm a fucking meathead.
Yeah.
It's nice to be a meathead though.
Yeah. And I think there's the being a meathead doesn't mean you're an asshole. You just like physical culture, but it's been pushed together as one thing where a meathead is an asshole. It's like, no. An asshole is an asshole and a meathead is a meathead. But there's asshole meatheads and there's nice meatheads. It becomes too convoluted, but it's great to enjoy your body and make it work hard for you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a meathead. I have meathead friends. So most of them are into barbells. So they're like, yeah, today we're gonna squat. Yeah, today is fucking leg day. And we're like, bro, every day is leg day. Everybody's chest day. Everybody's full body day.
Yeah. And I'm definitely not one person. I'm not a person to say you should only use kettlebells. But the benefit of kettlebells, especially right now during a pandemic, is I have everything I need right here in my bedroom. I have 10 kettlebells. I can do almost everything I need with them. The progressive overload aspect is not in terms of weightage. It's more in time under tension. And then the intensity of those movements. But yeah, I can't keep stacking the weight. That's my one limitation. I'm okay with that. But if I had a power rack, I would still use barbell back squatting. I'm not a big fan. I don't really do a lot of benching and I don't do a lot of deadlifting, but I would mostly use it for barbell high back squat. But in terms of everything you need at one place, one good kettlebell is a home gym.
Yeah, all you need to get a really fucking great workout is a 35-pound kettlebell. Let's face it.
Yeah, and the thing is, people like, again, speaking in generalities, a lot of people, they want a lot of different equipment because they also want to work out, but they also want to be entertained. And it's like it's difficult to get both. I apologize. When you're starting, you should be focusing on simplicity and taking your time and doing the movements correctly. You shouldn't be trying to do assisted weighted pull-ups with an ab wheel. And then, you know, like people get so obsessed with like the Instagram movements of the elite lifters just having fun because they've earned it at this point. They can do weirder stuff. But it's like, sorry, you want to do 1,000 swings today? Let's get in shape. Go ahead. Do 1,000 swings today. But nobody wants to do that.
Yeah, let's face it. The kettlebell isn't a beautiful movement. Most of the movements aren't that beautiful or romantic as the bench press because, let's face it, everybody asks you, how much do you press? That's the go-to meathead question. Not how many 35-pound kettlebell swings you can do or how much do you squat or how much can you snatch?
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know. The proof to me is again, because my concern is fighting. If, because you can be a pretty good fighter and not be that good in shape. You could be really good in shape and not be a good fighter. I'm looking for both to maximize. So like, if you're so strong, come fight me. Oh, you can't. Maybe you're not that strong. Oh, you're not in shape, but you can fight me. Great. I will outwork you and then you'll get tired and I'm a better fighter. I want both. It just means I have to work really hard, but that's what I enjoy doing. So I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I can relate on that place of your motivation coming a little bit from self-hate. Let's face it. Sometimes it works. Like most people, like I lost 65 pounds from when I was 17. Thank you. From when I was 17 to right now that I'm 21. And I remember that the moment I realized I had to lose weight is when I was at the gym. I took my gi off the first time I was taking my first jiu-jitsu class. It was a very bad teacher, so I won't even, I wouldn't write it out on my curriculum. But yeah, I remember seeing some really fucking fat titties and saying, no, this is a moment. Wanting to cry and saying no, the depression is a key, was my key of success, just like I can see the Nile lift part of you does.
Yeah, for sure. I think because for me it's I'm not a negative, like I'm not necessarily a negative person, but I'm a pretty positive person, but I know that for me the things that motivate me the most sometimes are just the right amount of self-hate, the right amount of come on, you're better than this, because I think you should invest time in figuring out how much positivity, how much negativity motivates you. Because all positivity for me feels redundant and it feels kind of counterintuitive. It's like, well, if I feel so good, I don't need to do anything.
Exactly.
So it's about finding the right ratio of being hard on yourself, but not too hard so you don't even try. It's just enough that you kind of are a little annoyed with yourself and you think you're being too lazy today. Those kind of things, for me, work best. But I'm not saying my way is for everyone.
You're one of the few people I can relate on that way of thinking and getting motivated. Like sometimes I just want to stay in my bed all day. Don't take any classes. Don't go to the gym. Whatever.
Yeah.
But sometimes you need to think like, bro, you can't be a fucking lazy ass. You look like all these fat ass saying they are beautiful.
Yeah, because there's days where like I'm not gonna be unrealistic and be like, every day work hard, make rise and grind. That's not necessarily true because some days you can earn days off. You can earn days to relax. You have to be able to both push yourself, but also listen to your body and be able to respect what those messages are telling you that, you don't have it today. And sometimes pushing on days that you don't want to do it can make you dislike doing it more. And to me, it's all about where you are in your path. Yeah. At this point, for me, it's my job. I made fitness and martial arts my job by working really, really hard. So I've trained my brain that I have to do it. This is what I made my life be. I made my life be about fitness and exercise. So even the days I don't feel like it, I don't even notice those anymore, because it's just like, that's not even a choice when it comes to working out, because I have to go train, I have to go teach. But it definitely influences how hard I have to push when I'm in my room with my kettlebells, I've done a couple 30-day challenges now where I've learned that like the immediate feeling I have in terms of being like, oh, I have to work out today, that sucks. Or I have to work out a little bit later, that sucks. That will die down the second I start moving. Every time I've done, no matter how tired I've been, no matter how not looking forward I was to that specific workout, the second I get going or the minute or two after I get going, I'm like, all right, let's do it. I'm having fun. Let's go. But that voice is still so, so loud.
Yeah. The moment when you're at the gym, at least this happens to me, that I think like, I'm already here. Why not do the best of it?
Yeah. That's why.
Yeah. What do you cut a lot of weight when you fight?
I'm retired from fighting competitively now. When I was fighting, I fought at 135 and I used to walk around probably 150. I was really light. 150, 148. So I didn't cut that much, but almost all of my fights were day of weigh-ins. So I couldn't water cut that much. It had to be a little more like 7-8 pounds of water probably the morning of. But now I'm like, I think I'm like 168 now, somewhere around there. Still pretty light, especially for I'm 6 foot. But I've always been like, I do cardio, like I fight every day. It's really hard for me to gain a lot of weight, but this is probably the biggest I've ever been. Yeah, I think I was like 170 a couple months ago, but this is probably the biggest I've ever been.
What's your favorite cheat meal when you were competing?
I love desserts. I love, like, there's a place in Brooklyn called Dunwell Donuts, and they make really, really good donuts. And that would be the thing I like would look forward to the most. Would be like, okay, tomorrow morning I get to go have half a dozen donuts. And of course, for me, my camp, I'd be eating so healthy. I would be looking forward to eating bad. I'd be looking forward to like eating all these things. And the second I can, I'm like, I just want two.
Yeah.
But what I do is I'd force myself to eat a bunch of bad stuff for the weekend after my fight to get that feeling out of my system. So I make myself eat a bunch of cake and shitty food. And then I'd be like angry with it and like disgusted by it that I wouldn't want it anymore again. So it's like a clever way of hacking my brain in that way.
It works. Let me tell you, I've done that unintentionally. Like what I remember right after my last Muay Thai fight, I just bought a fucking can of Nutella and I was eating it at college. I was in mid class and teachers were looking at me like, what the fuck are you doing? You were killing yourself with a diet a week ago.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, fighting unfortunately also kind of comes with eating disorder attached to it. It's a really unfortunate part of it. I've definitely noticed a part of my brain, like kind of like, it's hard for me to come back to being like at this stage in my, like I'm vegan. So I'm already kind of naturally like going to eat things that are low calorie and a little bit easier to digest and don't stay in my system for too long. But like, I'm not super picky with what I eat right now. I'll eat whatever. If I want to eat it, I'll eat it. I'm going to burn it off. It's just like the things I enjoy doing, MMA, kettlebells are going to burn it off. I don't stress about it too much anymore. Like I used to when I was fighting, because I feel like I kind of burned out part of my brain with fighting and the dieting part.
Yeah. Yeah. That sadly that happens a lot. You get burned out. I don't remember who said it, but the only difference between a eating disorder and being a high level athlete is how vicious you are, that one has goals.
Yeah. It's a weird thing where it's like, I'm doing it because I want to get to a certain place where, not to speak for people with eating disorders, I don't mean to speak out of turn, but it's like in eating disorders, a lot of times it's not necessarily goal oriented. It's more your belief about yourself where it's like, I'm just trying to do it's a means to an end in fighting. That doesn't mean it still can't become something after the fact.
Yeah. Sadly, it is kind of a shit eating disorder.
Yeah. No. I wish there was a way around it. I wish there was a way around weight cutting. I wish there was a way around, people almost killing themselves the day before a combat a match. But it just, I don't know how to open weight class, but it's like, that sucks.
Well, being a heavyweight, Mark Hunt does that.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. That's the only way
out. Guys that big rarely learn how to fight, though, because they don't need to.
Hey, Mark Hunt is one of the great... He is one of the most underrated fighters, if I may say.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love Mark Hunt. But people that take martial arts, that start martial arts... Well, people that fight rarely started martial arts with the idea of fighting. It just kind of progressed in that regard. People that start learning martial arts are rarely the big guy because they don't feel like they need to. So it's like the number of heavyweights is tiny compared to bantam or feather or lightweight.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, there's not many people built like Mirko Krokop working on the street. Right.
Yeah, that they're like, oh, I should learn how to defend myself. Why? You're huge. Who's fucking with you? Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah, that's something weird because most normal people would expect bigger guys to learn how to fight instead of the smaller guys who are the actual guy. Like I, as a heavyweight, it's very hard to find people to spar with.
Yeah. It's so, they're hard to spar with, and also there's so few of them. It's like, good luck finding another heavyweight to spar with. Like, you're going to fight them eventually anyway, you know? Yeah, I'm glad I'm not, I'm very glad I'm not a heavyweight.
Yeah, it sucks. It fucking sucks. Now, something very iconic of New York is the dollar pizza slices. Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Uh-huh. If you wanted to, I don't care. I don't know how people give a shit. I think this whole like argument about like, this doesn't belong. What are you, a cop? Who gives a fuck? If someone likes it, they like it. I don't give a shit. I have no like feelings of like blasphemy for like pizza. I don't give a shit. If you like it, have fun. Life is bad enough as it is. I don't need to make it worse by telling you what you shouldn't and should eat.
Those little sparks of depression are beautiful. Well,
yeah, I mean, it's a combination of just like, you know, being sad internally, but also just like, what? There's other things to, why do you care about such a stupid thing?
Yeah, that's true. People who get offended because of that, or people who get offended because of anything on the internet. Let's face it.
To a degree, I mean, you know, there's things like that where it's like, it's, they get upset about pineapple pizza. A, are they really upset, or they just want something to talk online about? I don't believe everyone that gets upset about it really is upset. B, there's things online that you should be getting upset at if they're, you know, just because they're online doesn't mean you shouldn't. You know, if someone being sexist, like, you're being sexist, fuck you. I don't care that you're online. You should be called out for your shitty behavior. But something that doesn't affect anyone else's life, like pineapple on pizza, I don't give a fuck. Have fun.
Yeah, that's true. That's fucking true. Now, what's the worst kind of student to have as an MMA teacher?
I've been pretty lucky in the years I've been teaching. I enjoy most students in terms of figuring out how to teach them, what route they need to take the information. Some students need to be pushed. Some students need to be pulled. Some need to be encouraged, and some need to be slowed down. I think my strength as instructor will be being able to recognize that in an individual and being able to give information to them that most. The only students I've ever had a hard time with are mostly guys who just, they'll say, like, they'll look at me while I'm giving them a critique or giving them advice, and they'll cut me off with like, yeah, they're making it seem like they already knew that, or we're conversing. No. I am correcting because that's my job that you pay me to be here for, but your ego doesn't let you be underneath someone. And you're not underneath me because I'm your instructor, but at least be willing to accept the information. Don't act like I'm just some guy on the street. I'm here for a reason. I'm just suggesting you do something differently, but your ego tells you you gotta like cool guy me, like, yeah, I got it. Yeah. No, you don't. If you had it, I wouldn't say anything. So that's been the only issue. I've never had to kick anybody out of my gym. I've never had to yell at, have I yelled at anyone? I've talked to some people, which is guys that can't control their power, or guys who, they don't understand that the person they may be like rolling with is a small woman that they don't need to push all of their weight onto. Things like that. Those are the things that annoy me, but I've been very lucky.
Okay, that's nice. That's nice. That's good luck. That's good luck also.
Yeah. But it's also the culture that my gym has kind of nurtured. We're not a tough guy gym. We're a gym in Williamsburg in Brooklyn. You know, we're a gym full of artists and people that work normal 9-to-5 jobs. So like, it's not a bunch of fighters trying to prove themselves. It's people that want to get a little fit, maybe learn how to defend themselves a little bit. So we're also lucky in that regard, that the culture comes from the top down. And it's about helping each other, not trying to be fucking assholes.
Yeah, those guys and those tough guy gyms always suck. They always have this, it's a dick measuring competition. That's it.
Yeah, there's it can help. Those kind of gyms can help very specific people reach a certain level of skill set, but I'm not interested in specific people. I'm interested in most people. I'm interested in the average person learning martial arts to both be able to defend themselves and also better their life.
Yeah. Now, as people can see on your Instagram or your TikTok, you have a lot of tattoos.
Yeah.
Who do you think is the fighter with the shittiest tattoos aside of Brock Lesnar with his sword penis on the chest?
I love Brock Lesnar's tattoos. I think they're awesome. I think they're hard as shit. The meat hooks on the back are very cool. I'm trying to think if anyone has, like, because here's the thing. Here's my issue with when people say bad tattoos. I worked at a tattoo shop for a long time. A lot of my friends are tattooers. I dated a tattooer for a long time. When most people say bad tattoos, what they mean is they don't like the image. Most people can't recognize good quality tattoo because it's not their job. It's not what they've put a lot of effort into being able to recognize. Oh, the tattoo is actually skilled or unskilled. And honestly, sometimes unskilled tattoos look also very cool. An example would be Ryan Reynolds in A Place Beyond the Pines or Riz Ahmed in Sounds of Metal, like those kind of scratchy prison style tattoos. If the aesthetic is correct, can look very cool. I can't think of anyone whose tattoos who I've like, here's a tattoo trend I dislike because I think it looks bad aesthetically. Okay. It's MMA fighters who get chain link fences tattooed on them.
Oh yeah.
I've seen a couple and I just think they don't look very good. It's a waste of space. It's mostly empty space. It's a weird thing to get tattooed. Trying to think who has cool tattoos. I mean, a couple of the Hawaiian guys or there's a Guam fighter, like their traditional Tabori style. I think if it's done well, it looks fucking gorgeous and it moves with the body really well. And that's the aesthetic, is to flow with the body and the way the muscles land or the muscles lay. I just think it looks really, really cool. There's a John Truck, I think his name is. He's a Shoya Roll guy. He fights in the UFC or fought in the UFC. He's a beautiful leg sleeve. But in terms of bad tattoos, I mean, the one that stands out the most just because it gets made fun of so much is Alan Belcher's Johnny Cash portrait.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it's just like, it's like a caricature portrait. So like, it's not supposed to be a photographic portrait. It's meant to be kind of cartoonish and funny. So is it bad? No, but people, again, they dislike imagery. They don't understand style or technique. But I can't think of anyone. And also, I don't really like a tattoo's on you forever. I kind of dislike being like, hey, your tattoo sucks. Like, well, thanks, man. It's on me forever. What the fuck?
That's true. But that's true.
Especially people that are very good fighters.
Now, what's your thoughts on Volkov's new back tattoo that he got covered up? Like, I don't know if you remember, but he had a stingray on the back that looked just like the one from the grandma on Moana.
The
stingray.
Yeah.
And now he got it covered up. Yeah, I remember.
And he has like a samurai head.
Yeah.
Look, as someone who has a very big tattoo that he wants to get covered up, I absolutely understand. It's an interesting choice that he went with two different cultures he's not a part of. The Stingray Manta is almost like a Pacific Islander imagery. And now the samurai head is almost a Japanese imagery. What is he again? Is he Polish?
Russian.
He's Russian. Russian has so much cool imagery. Like, I don't know why you wouldn't get some sick, you know, those Russian buildings and some that panther holding a knife with the gun. You ever seen the Russian prison tattoo book?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's like a fucking panther holding a gun and a knife, which is like the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Some Viking shit. Some Viking shit. He's a fucking Viking.
Yeah, unfortunately, Viking imagery inherently looks racist. So
that's shitty.
I understand not going in that direction. Racist. the fucking neo-Nazis wearing that shit.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
I get it. It looks fine. Like, in terms of a cover-up, they did a really good job. blending the covered part with the actual image. Like whoever did a really good job, because a lot of times cover-ups, like if you look at Cody Garbrandt's cover-up, because he has, it's like so obviously a cover-up.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, it just looks clunky, which again, cover-ups are really hard to do. They're not easy. A good one is few and far between, but this is a pretty good one.
Yeah. It's a shame the fact that all Viking shit is now is very related to racism. As someone who was raised pagan, Norse pagan, it kind of sucks. It's like, oh, okay. Bro, that shit sucks. The only one who has pulled it off is Mareta, who has literally a fucking Mjolnir on the chest, but he's Brazilian, so you cannot relate to that.
Oh, right.
You can't relate that to racism. He's like, bro, you're a minority. You can't be white supremacist.
Yeah, it's fine. Have fun with it. Who gives a shit?
John Collarwood also pulls it off. She has some runes.
Yeah, she does. She has a lot of.
The problem is you can't go with one big symbol. You can go a lot of.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That definitely makes it a little bit easier to digest.
Exactly. Also, you can't just have it on your face or something. Just too sure. Fucking big. Yeah, that sucks. Yeah.
I mean, I for years I've always done this thing. Like, oh, good job, and now I can't do it anymore.
Yeah,
that, I'm like, fuck, I'm doing this.
The Shaka. Yeah. That's old reliable.
Yeah. And I don't do this anymore. I think it's because I got annoyed with white belts doing it so much. It's like, all right, I'm not doing that shit anymore.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Like I even on Tinder, I would start conversations like, so hi, and the emoji.
I do the this and the tongue.
No. I wouldn't use the tongue. I would just put the hand emoji, and that's great. Would be it. Yeah, I was telling you, white belts suck. At least I'm not one of those who got hit like a white stripe tattooed and then the blue, waiting for the blue one, and then the black.
Man, I think I was already a blue belt. I have one jiu-jitsu tattoo. I think I got one as a blue belt. But I mean, when I started, I knew I was going to do this forever. Like, I knew, like, I'm not a person who just kind of tests things out. I've always been a all-in kind of a person, to my detriment a lot of times, to the detriment of my relationships and my family. But yeah, I was a blue belt when I got my jiu-jitsu tattoo. So it's like, I get it, whatever. It's fun. You get enthusiastic about it.
What is your jiu-jitsu tattoo?
There's a political cartoon that they did in Brazil where Helio Gracie challenged Joe Louis to a fight, but he challenged Joe Louis to a fight with his hands tied behind his back. And, oh wait, hold on, I have it. Ugh. Have it for so it's Helio Gracie.
Yeah.
I had a tattooed on my leg. And that's my jiu-jitsu tattoo that most people, when they see it, they just think it's Edgar Allan Poe. So whatever.
Well, he's tied up, and let's face it, Edgar Allan Poe is a real face of depression.
Oh, for sure. It's a win-win.
Exactly. It's a great idea for yourself. Like, now, what do you think is the most important kettlebell exercise there is? If you could only do one exercise, which one would it be?
This is two questions, or I'm asking. So is it the most important exercise for people to learn, or that I would do?
Your particular case. Or you can say both.
So if I had to pick one for me, I'd probably pick snatch, because it's the swing, the clean, the jerk in one thing. It's a lot of movement. It's also the most difficult and most cardiovascularly intensive exercise. If I had to teach one person one thing, like if they're starting, I would say the alternating single hand swing. Because even though the two hand swing is great, if you don't have that heavy of a kettlebell, you can cheat it and you will, the technique will suffer because of it. But when single hand, you have to be a little more patient on the downswing, and you have to get that arm body connection to really work for you instead of kind of shaking the kettlebell up and down. But I definitely wouldn't want to only do snatches. It wouldn't be very fun for my hands, but if I had to pick one, it'd probably be that.
Yeah, it fucks up your hands.
It can, especially as you're, you know, starting off, you're learning how to, how hard to hold and when to open and how to grip and how to re-grip inside of a handle. Yeah, I definitely had to sand down a lot of calluses after my January challenge of doing the IKFF level one test 30 days a row. My hands are killing. Like the first week of February, my hands are just like this the whole time.
Yeah, and I remember you saying on the yesterday's workout that your forearm was still killing you from all the hits.
Yeah, it's still very, yeah, from all the cleaning of the kettlebell landing and also snatching, even though my technique is good, it's the rep, the everyday, yeah, of it was just like, it's still a little tender. And I know from fighting, like my shins, I don't feel my shins anymore. It's just a matter of time until I stop feeling my forearms. It's just right now, it's just like enough to annoy me. And I know when I know the annoying feeling means I'm just making it worse in terms of how long until it goes away. So I've been wearing just those little sleeves to help out.
Yeah. Now, what does someone need to do to be part of the kettlebell cult?
Of mine or just in general?
Of yours or in general, both. Dealer's choice.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, playfully using the word cult, because there are a lot of...
Of course.
Yeah, a lot of awful, awful cults. I think just buying into how useful kettlebells are and accepting that they are, in terms of home gym equipment, other than a power rack, which not everyone can fit in their apartment and is a big investment.
Yeah,
exactly. It's the best piece of equipment you can get. And you start sharing that information and reminding people that the kettlebell is the premier and best option for the majority of human beings. Then you're part of the cult.
So I'm very into the cult then.
Welcome, brother.
Yeah, I love it. Right now, I have very shitty kettlebells. Like they will outlive me, but they're sure, very shitty.
Let's face it. What weights do you have?
I used to have more, but I gave a 22 pounds to my grandpa. Mm-hmm. I gave a 15 pounds to my mom. I have two 35s, 144, and 155.
Oh, great.
Yeah. The problem is
anything on
their shit.
Anything under 35 is it's an expensive kettlebell is obviously really good because of if it's a good brand, you don't have to think about it in terms of wear and tear. You can just trust it. You know that it's the weight is properly distributed. You know that it's balanced. You know that the materials are solid. But my first three kettlebells that I just sold one. Sold one of them, but like, I got them 10 years ago. They're not great, but they last. You know, like, are they the most fun things to work with? No, but they're there. They weren't expensive, and they lasted me a long time.
Yeah, like I think Pavel Tatsulini was the one who said that you don't really own kettlebells. You are just getting them ready for the next generation.
Yeah, that's a really good way. Yeah, it's they will outlive you and they'll outperform you. And they'll hopefully, if you, that's the thing is like, I haven't seen that many kettlebells break. I've seen it. I've seen pictures of them.
But
you've I've never done it.
I think people that actually break a kettlebell, they do it on purpose. Like, how fucking easy it is to do it yourself.
It seems like the ways I've seen it happen most often is where people will rack in one hand two kettlebells.
Oh, yeah.
And then when they drop it, the angle of how they have to hold them it comes down on the handle.
Okay.
And that will force it to kind of pop off. But it's like, now I'm lucky enough that I was able to get myself some nice competition kettlebells. And I keep finding myself babying them and like not wanting to chip the paint. And like, stop caring, man. Who gives a shit? Just paint. Just have fun with it.
Hey, you have I remember yesterday you were using a beautiful purple competition kettlebell.
Yeah, I have two Kettlebell Kings. They're 20 kilogram, which is 44 pounds. And I have two Kettlebell Kings competition sport 53 pounds. I'll show you my kettlebells. So those are for teaching, the 20 pounders. Those are two of my first kettlebells, are 35. These are my 44s, 53s. And then I have a pair of Rogue. Rogue made these like hybrid style kettlebells that are, they're iron, but they're competition shape. And I got them just to test out. I don't love them, but I think they're a good in between for people who want to try out competition kettlebells and see if they enjoy the geometry of them, because I haven't competed yet in kettlebells. I might at some point, because I really enjoy working towards a goal. But I just really enjoy how competition kettlebells feel in the hand, like doing long cycle, how it sounds like the when you come down from the overhead press into the rack, the clapping noise, I really
it's
enjoy
beautiful.
It.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's poetic.
I mean, I didn't buy it. I bought kettlebells in 2010. And then this 2 months ago was the first time I paid for kettlebells since then.
Now, I need to show you mine later. I will send you a picture. They look shitty as fuck. Like, they are the worst looking kettlebells. I love them because they are my kettlebells. It's like having an ugly child. You cannot say, hate it. I fucking hate you. You're fucking ugly. You need to... I even put some tape faces on all of my kettlebells when the quarantine was starting. I was like, yeah, why not? My own version of Castaway, right?
Exactly.
I even named them. Like, the big one is called Pavel. Most obvious reasons. Then Fyodor. Smart. Like, nice. Russian MMA fighter names. So, yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Why not? It's easier to say, hey, hand me Pavel, then hey, hand me the 25 kilo.
Sure. Much easier.
Yeah. Now, what's the most important condition exercise outside of sparring to fight?
On your most important. Well, let's say, I'll say like this, because everyone's different and people are going to argue, and I don't want to argue. I hate arguing. I have no interest in it. I'll tell you the things. If I had a fight camp, if I had a fight camp again, I really think I would do a lot of long cycle, which is the two arm clean and jerk for 10 minutes. I would do that a lot. And I'd do a lot of L-sit pull-ups. And snatching. Yeah, snatch and long cycle is basically it. I can't think of anything else that would really benefit me. Like, in terms of, because again, another benefit of kettlebells is when I started doing them is because A, I didn't want to get, like, my goal wasn't to get huge. My goal was to get a little bit stronger and have fighting cardio. But also, I didn't have enough time to also go to the gym. I needed something in my house that I can do for half an hour and get a really, really good, exhausting exercise in. And that kettlebells are the answer for that, because literally 6 minutes, you'll be exhausted if you do it right. So in terms of time wise, I really can't think of anything that's more useful. Maybe a Concept 2 rower, but that's a big piece of equipment that's, you know, $1,400, and it's like takes up a huge amount of space. Maybe a ski erg, but again, that's what, $2,000? Like, you know, it's like these very, very complex machinery things that could be useful or could be almost as good as a kettlebell, but it's like, I just do a kettlebell. Two competition kettlebells is $300 if you get really, really good ones. There you go. You're good for life, basically. Yeah, long cycle and snatching is what I'd focus on probably. And sprinting probably, you know, mixing that in as well.
Maybe some jump rope.
Maybe. I don't know. A jump rope to me is kind of, it's fine, but I don't, to me, time-wise, it's like, it's a good warm-up. I don't see, when I fight, I'm not jumping. I'm not, I don't understand, like, it's not, I don't know. I think people over-romanticize the necessity of jump rope, but if, again, if you enjoy it, if you find, like, it gives you the value you're looking for, then by all means, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you were saying you had 45 minutes. I just realized what time it is.
Oh, I don't have a timer. How are we on time?
It's 48. Okay. Yeah.
Good. Do you have any other questions?
Yeah. How many midgets can you take on a fight?
How many what?
How many midgets can you take on a fight?
Oh, geez. No, zero, none. I have no interest in hurting me.
These are imaginary midgets. Don't worry, you won't get canceled.
I just don't like it. But there's a funny website where you can put in your information, like, you know, height, weight, martial arts experience, or and it tells you how many kids you could beat up. And I think for me, it was like 400 or something like that. Which I'm like, I teach kids. I think I could do more than that. I know exactly how many kids I can beat up.
Okay. What would go your go-to plan?
My go-to plan? Fighting a bunch of kids?
Yeah.
Knees. All knees. They're knee height already. Just one little head grab and right into the knee. Pa, pa, pa. Easy.
Okay. I didn't know there was a website for that. I'll need to look it up.
It's very funny.
Well, that was the last standard question of the podcast. Do you have anything else you want to say to the listeners?
No, thank you so much. Thank you for listening. If you want to follow me on Instagram or Twitter, it's This Diego Lopez. I have Nihilift on Twitter and TikTok as well. And I host a podcast with my best friend and roommate, Micah Brucey. It's called A Little Time Podcast. It's comedy. It's just fun. Nothing too serious. And that's it. Thank you so much for having me, bud. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.